It's great to be here this morning before you. I'm really honored and humbled to be up here. Like Date said, my name is Mo. For those of you who do think I have an alternate lifestyle as a rapper, that's actually not true, Mo Diddy. My real name is Maureen, but my last name is Diddy, which is kind of fun. So it's good to be here, and I'm glad that you are each here this morning. So for those of you who have been with us as we've been walking through James, I'm sure that we can all think of at least one thing that has stuck out to us, one thing that we've learned, one message that has just really been pertinent to our lives. I definitely can say several different things for me. A couple of those things have been James' perspective of the poor and how he just really advocates for the poor and really helps us to understand who they are and who I am in reference to, like, where I fit on that scale of rich to poor in the reality of life and how I should be treating them. And additionally, in that, what it truly means to be a doer of the word. That's been something huge for me because I'm someone who thinks about a lot of stuff and talks about a lot of stuff, but am I actually doing it? What am I actually doing? Am I being a doer of the word? Those are a couple things that have stuck out to me. Today's passage is in James 5, verses 7 through 11. And it's the second to last passage that we're going to be spending time on in James. And it's sort of a bookend to the book of James, because today we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about suffering and trials and being patient in them. And in the same way, in the very opening passages of James, he says, "Consider it joy, my brothers, when you experience trials of various kinds." And he spends his very first words talking about trials and suffering and how we are to respond in that. And so again, today he comes back, and after he's talked about all these other things in the middle, he wraps it up and kind of comes back to that idea and advocates for the poor in that. And something to remember is that James is speaking to the poor. That he, last week when Tim spoke about how he was kind of giving these condemnations on the rich, that he wasn't speaking to the rich when he was telling them all the ways that they needed to change, but rather, he's actually speaking to the poor and basically saying, this is the justice that's going to come to you because of how God is going to treat, or how God is going to judge the rich in the last days. And so, remember that James is speaking to the poor as we spend time in this passage today. So we're going to go ahead and read it. It's James 5, verses 7 through 11, and let's read that out loud together. "Be patient, then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy." So today we're really going to spend time talking about this idea in verse 8 where James says, stand firm, be patient, and stand firm as you wait for the coming of Christ. But as I began to go through this process of looking at this passage and finding out what it was meaning to me and my perspective on it, I looked at the Greek, which is the original language of the New Testament, of this word stand firm, and found that it actually means, in Greek, it says sterezate tas kardias humon, which sterezate means to make strong or to strengthen, and kardias is heart, just like we would use cardio or cardiovascular. And so that word for stand firm actually means strengthen your hearts or make your hearts strong, which to me, I don't know enough about where that translation happened, but to me that those words, make your heart strong and strengthen your heart, resonates with me a lot more than the word stand firm. And maybe because we use that term a lot more, maybe it's a little more cliched even in when we're talking about scripture, but make your heart strong is what James is saying here. And in the passage, or in the scripture translation that I use, which is the English Standard, the word that is translated there is establish your hearts. And when I read that, that just really sunk into me. To establish your heart in anticipation of the coming of Christ. And so as we jump in that into that today, I want to first consider what the coming of Christ means to us. And we're just going to kind of frame this passage with our perspective on the coming of Christ in order to look at the reasons, the ways that James gives us to establish our hearts. And so what I did is, I knew there's a lot of different ways that people consider the coming of Christ. So people have a lot of different meanings attached to it. Everyone kind of has a different perspective on it. And I wanted to kind of figure that out a little bit. So I sent an email out to about 40 people I know, most of whom go to Jacob's Well, several of whom are in this room right now, and asked them, what do you think of when you hear the phrase, the return of Christ? Or when you hear, you know, we're waiting for the coming of Christ. What is it that comes to your mind? And what words and phrases and descriptions do come with that? And so I'm just going to read. I just kind of took little pieces out of everyone's responses and put them together in this list. And we're going to put it up on the screen. And I'm just going to read them out loud to you. And I want you to kind of just reflect and listen and internalize as I read and think about which one resonates with you. And then I'm going to ask you to share that, about which one means the most to you or which one would just sink in with you the most. So just listen as I read these. We'll really get to see him with our eyes. Today is the day of salvation, the light at the end of the tunnel. Prepared every day for his arrival. Never know the day or hour. Vindication of faithful humanity in the wake of oppression. Harmony and justice. Pure and unspeakable excitement. Setting right what is not right. The fantastic culmination of life. Face to face with God. Reunion and restoration. Gut check of my faith. Good times and the restoration of all things. Supernatural event evident to the world. Reconciliation with God and neighbor. Peace, compassion, and love of people instead of greed, war, and hate. My brokenness relieved. And so obviously there's kind of two different ways, and I think that there's two ways that people in the first century that James is writing to saw this. One was a more literal judgment day kind of coming, and another was a more metaphorical being relieved from my immediate trials. And so what are some of those? Just let's take a couple minutes to share what stuck out to you, and if you want to tell us why that stuck out to you or resonated with you, that'd be great, but you can just say which one if not. Reunion and restoration. What else? You could leave that list actually back up there, Ben, for a second. My brokenness relieved. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, she said kind of the reversal, almost like the contrast of what is now and how much it's going to change and be different. Anyone else? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we'll get to see him with our eyes. It'll finally be evident to everyone in the world. Anyone else? One more? Well, that in that light, whichever one of those stuck out to you and just sunk into your heart the most, I want you to think about that as I go on and think about what the coming of Christ means to you and what it is that you're waiting for. You know, is it something just personally in your life, or is it this greater, you know, judgment that, you know, James doesn't go into a lot of what he means by that, but just think about what that means to you and the words that come to your mind when you think of that. And in that mind, we're going to go on and look into, James is going to tell us how to establish our hearts. So as we wait for Christ to return and save us, James commands us to establish our hearts, and he gives us two elements of how we can do that. Namely, do not grumble, which he says in verse 9, and remember the prophets, which he describes in verses 10, 11. So we're going to start with do not grumble in verse 9, and I'll read that again. to you. It says, don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. And so James exhorts that grumbling and complaining will actually destabilize our hearts. And that our attempts to strengthen and establish them and to be patient and wait, when we grumble and complain, it's kind of like the rug is being yanked out right out from under our attempts to be stable and to establish our hearts in that way. And this isn't a new concept to James. If you remember what he said in James chapter 3 a few weeks ago when we spent time several weeks there on taming your tongue, he really lays into us about taming your tongue and watching the things that come out of our mouths. And here he's saying the same thing, but in a way he's taking it a step further, and he's telling Christ followers to not only tame your tongue, but tame your tongue when you're experiencing trials and suffering, because that's when it's the hardest to do, especially for people who are in the most severe of trials that have been going on for who knows how long. To not complain in the midst of that. So let's take a minute to consider your life and consider what happens to us and the kind of trials we experience. Most of us in this room probably don't experience the severe long-time suffering that maybe the people that James is talking to experience, but we definitely experience things that make us complain, for sure. And I think for most of us, the times when we're going to be most likely to complain is simply when we have a bad day, or maybe a series of events that just don't go right for us. And I know that for me, when I'm most likely to complain is when things happen in my day that make me feel like I'm right and everyone else is wrong, and I'm smart and everyone else is stupid, and if they would just do it my way, then everything would go a lot smoother. And that's when I'm most likely to complain. And the next friend who comes into my path is going to hear all these reasons why I'm smarter than all these other people and why I'm making the right decisions and no one else is. And I don't realize that at the moment, but I think that deep down, that's what's going on in my head when I complain about a bad day or when I think that things aren't going my way. And oftentimes, I kind of write this off as venting. I'm just venting. I got to vent. I'm not actually complaining. I'm just venting. But the other day, in fact, I'm a student at KU, and I take all my classes down at the Edwards campus, which is very small. It has like three buildings on it. It's down in Overland Park. And I had to go to the Lawrence campus the other day to meet with some professors, and I'd never been like in the middle of KU's campus in Lawrence before. And I was kind of running late, and the first professor I had to meet, I hadn't met before, and I was kind of trying to impress him, so it was important that I was going to be on time. And I drive into the campus, and I immediately get lost. And then, you know, for those of you who have been on campuses that size, there's just thousands of people walking around, and of course, they have the right-of-way, and so I'm trying to drive somewhere. I don't know where I'm going. And so this is making it even worse. And so all to say, I had several other things happen over the course of this morning, and I was late to this meeting, and just nothing was going my way. And I definitely was having this, like, if all these people would just get out of my way, like I, you know, own the place or something. I'd never even been there before. But all to say, as I got in my car, I'll admit I talk to myself most of the time when I'm in my car. I was in my car and just kind of definitely grumbling, to say the least, about the things that were happening and the way that my day was going and how it wasn't going as I had planned. And I realized after several minutes, just a few minutes of that, how unstable it seemed that my heart had become. And of course, this is happening in the middle of my preparation for this very sermon, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. But how just little kinds of complaining and grumbling about little petty things like that, I just felt like my heart kind of filled up with this bitterness and anger and pride that I just kind of said, oh my gosh, like, my heart is definitely not established right now because I am taking, you know, these circumstances out on the people that are around me, even though no one else is hearing it. The grumbling and the complaining was just making it a worse situation than it already was. And so, all to say that James tells us, in order to establish our hearts, we must not complain, and we must tame our tongues, and that grumbling and complaining will destabilize our hearts as we attempt to patiently wait for the coming of Christ in our lives. And so think about what that is for you. You know, what is it that causes you to most quickly grumble and complain, and how that is going to destabilize your heart. So that's the first thing that James gives us in order to establish our hearts. The second thing is kind of a contrast to that destabilization that comes with grumbling, And he gives us an exhortation next to remember the prophets, which is an activity that will help us to stabilize and help us to be established. And so I'm going to reread to you verses 10 through 11 of our passage. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. And so James tells us, remember the prophets. And James isn't the only one to tell us this. Jesus tells us this several times over the course of his ministry. He references the prophets and the men and women of the Old Testament and reminds us of their stories. And additionally, the author of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 11, which is kind of a famous passage known as the Hall of Faith or the Great Cloud of Witnesses, where the author of Hebrews goes through this list of all these people that we've learned about over history and how their faith in God remained stable in spite of their circumstances. And even in that passage in Hebrews, he goes through all these characters of the Old Testament, and he actually lands on the group of people that we know as the actual prophets and says, I don't even have time. He literally pretty much says, I don't have time or space right here to go into all the reasons that we need to remember the things that these prophets have done and the ways that we can learn from their faith. But in this passage, he speaks specifically of Job and how Job clung to God and desperately hoped in him and waited for his restoration among some of the most severe of trials that we can ever imagine, losing his family, losing his land, losing everything he owned, and then, of course, having physical pain and ailments on his body put on him. And the interesting thing is that just after James tells us not to complain and not to grumble, he goes right into Job, who, of all the people that we know in Scripture, is one of the most infamous for complaining. Isn't that? I thought when I read that, I was like, wait, Job, everyone knows that all Job did was complain through that whole time. He was just constantly complaining to God, but it's important that we see the difference between that, because Job's complaining was these honest, genuine outcries to God, and they came out of a heart of honesty and of truth and of hope and faith in God, and that he never lost his faith. And his were just prayers and true, genuine outcries for God to help him and save him. And I can immediately, as I think about that, know that there is a very, very stark contrast between how Job complained and cried out to God and the kind of grumbling and complaining that I do when I have a bad day, and how for me that comes out of pride and arrogance and selfishness, and it does not come out of genuine desire for God. And so it's important that we see that as James gives us Job as this example, who never lost his faith. And then finally, James reveals that in the end, God's compassion and mercy is what brought about justice. And so when we remember the prophets, we not only remember their trials and their steadfastness, but we remember God's character and his promises to fulfill his word and to show compassion and mercy, both on what we've done and on what we've left undone. And that as we remember the prophets, we're not only remembering them, but we're remembering God and we're remembering who he has been and who he will continue to be. And so those are the two main things that James says. In order to establish your hearts in waiting for the Lord, do not grumble, because that will destabilize you. And remember the prophets, because they are our example over time of standing firm and remaining steadfast. And so in all this, I'm reminded again of chapter 3 of James, when he speaks of the two kinds of wisdom that Tim preached on a few weeks ago. And I'm just going to read this passage out loud to you. It won't be up on the screen, but it's James chapter 3, verses 14 through 17, if you want to turn there. It says, "But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly and spiritual and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." And so I see this idea of two kinds of wisdom. The first one kind of being this false wisdom that would come with that grumbling and complaining. and that when we forget who God has been in our lives and we just complain about our circumstances, sometimes, like for me, I still think that I'm attaining this knowledge or this wisdom in that, but it's a false wisdom. It's not real when it comes out of our selfishness and out of our bitterness. But then James gives us the second wisdom, which is true and pure and will come out of, it will both come out of and help to create patience and steadfastness and making our hearts strong as we wait for the Lord. And so establishing our hearts in these ways will lead to this true wisdom that James describes earlier. So again, the things that he's saying here tie back to things he's been telling us, taming our tongues and being steadfast in trials and finding that true wisdom. And so I think that there's two applications from this passage. The first one is outward, more of an external application, and the second one is inward, more personal for each one of us to think about. The first, again, is that to remember that James is talking to the poor here, and he's exhorting them to stand firm in trials, which is not an easy thing to do for the level of trials they were probably experiencing. And so because James is encouraging them and speaking to them, my question, the first point is, how are we advocating for the poor? And how are we helping the kind of people that James may have been talking to at the time? And even to think about it this way, could it be that I, as someone who has the means to help someone who doesn't, could it be that I could actually be a fulfillment of Christ's coming in their life by the way that I'm helping them? I was thinking about this a lot as we sang, the last song we sang before I came up, the Surely We Can Change, and how it says, where there is pain, let us bring grace. Where there is suffering, bring serenity. For those afraid, let us be brave. Where there is misery, let us bring them relief. And I think that just ties in exactly with what James is saying. How can we advocate for them and actually be a symbol of Christ coming in the lives of those who are in more need than we are? So that's kind of the first application. The second thing, kind of more inward, is when you experience suffering, whatever it may be, whether it's something that you would say just a little petty thing or something more great or long term, when I suffer, what is my response? Am I grumbling and complaining because of it? Or am I saying, no, I remember the prophets and I remember what God has done over time and that he's going to do it again. And it reminds me of this time last year when we celebrated Advent and how we spent that whole month saying, God has been good to me thus far. Look at all the things he's done over time. Look at all the things he's done in my life. So why shouldn't I believe that he's going to continue to do that? And that's basically what James is saying, is we remember the prophets, we're remembering what God has done, and therefore believing that he's going to continue to do that. So when you suffer, what is your response? Is it remembering that, or is it complaining and grumbling about your circumstances? So in conclusion, how will you establish your heart? In your life, what are the dangers of destabilizing? Is it you're quick to complain, quick to forget the things that God has done for you? So take a moment to consider what in your life is in that danger of destabilization, and how can you reorient yourself towards Christ in a way that will help your heart to be established. So as we close, I'm just going to ask us to take about 1 minute of silence and just spend some time praying or reflecting on that. What in your life is in danger of destabilization, and how can you reorient yourself in order for your heart to be established? So let's take a moment of silence and I'll pray and to close. Holy God, we are so thankful for what you've done in each of our lives and what you've done over time. And so as James tells us, we just pray together that you would remind us of those things so that in the moment of suffering or trial, that we could remember you instead of complaining, and that in that we could go on to help others. So just help us in your name and for your glory to establish our hearts in you. I pray this in your name. Amen.